Next speaker is Gwen Foster, who has been quoted worldwide and has actually taken a city. You will see the title of her talk is Lifestyle in the City. She is the retired health czar of the city of Philadelphia, where she actually went in and made a huge difference, with emphasis on the huge, because tackling the issues of diabetes and the overweight issues, the fact that people were not exercising, looking at the tremendous amount of problems related with that, how she went into a city and actually showed by interventions, which she will share with you today, that things can be changed. It takes courage, it takes conviction, and it takes someone of the stature of Gwen Foster to take on this kind of issue and to work on it. So Gwen, it's a huge privilege for us to welcome you today.
Well, I certainly appreciate the introduction and the invitation by Dr. Handesides to share with you this morning. I really appreciate the very significant way in which Dr. Handeside and his team have all connected with the World Health Organization, and it's like working outside of the box, and that's the kind of people I like to connect with. But I've got a lot to tell you, so I'm going to move right along. I'd like to share Philadelphia's story. When I was invited to come to the city of Philadelphia, this was what I discovered, not what I expected, because Mayor John Street, who is a Seventh-day Adventist, actually had, while he was the president of city council, had actually asked me to consider coming to the city to do something in the area of health. My brothers are physicians, and I was in public health, and John Street was the kind of the motor mouth and actually practiced what he preached. So he knew that we wanted to do something significant in the area of health should he decide to run for mayor. And he did. And in the year 2000, when we came into office, this is what I was confronted with, the fact that Philadelphia was the fattest and the most unfit city in the nation. I also discovered that I was not going to have much of a budget, because those who were not politically aligned with John Street would vote through city council that no taxpayer dollars would come to this strange office that the mayor created, the Office of Health and Fitness, with me as the health and fitness czar. So you can imagine the political ramifications with the commissioner of health and all the Department of Health wondering, well, what's the relationship going to be? So it was quite... it was a very tense political situation. But this was our report card, the Men's Fitness Magazine, as they ranked the 50 largest urban areas in the United States. And you can see on the right-hand side that our report card was not one that we were very proud of. So I had to decide what to do. And the mayor, of course, was very committed to improving the health of Philadelphians. And this is one of the first things that we did. I had to collaborate. I discovered that my philosophy is that all of us are smarter and stronger and richer and healthier than one of us alone. So I had to develop some collaborations. One was with the Philadelphia is a sports town. So the 76ers is a very, very special team in Philadelphia. And here the mayor and I are at halftime. We are playing Houston's basketball team. And the good news was that that first year, Philadelphia was the fattest city. And the fact is that we lost that designation the next year, because Houston became the fattest city the next year. And we were playing Houston. The good news is that we lost our designation as the fattest city, but bad news is we lost the game that night, too. So here the mayor and I at halftime with about 30,000 of our Philadelphia residents, and we are promoting our challenge to lose the weight and to get healthy. Now, this happens to be a very popular person in Philadelphia, Pat Croce. He was the president and owner of the 76ers. And he invited me to dinner early on because he really had wanted to be the health czar. And so wherever Pat Croce went, the cameras went. So here we are sitting at dinner. You can't see it, but we're surrounded by the media and other VIPs sitting around the table. And here Pat is sharing with me his plan to get Philadelphia off the fat list. And he thought that if we could, using, of course, 76, which would give some credibility and some visibility to his team, the 76ers, that we could consider losing 76 tons of fat in 76 days. And so here I'm trying to explain to him that's really not what I wanted to do because I didn't want people trying to lose weight in unhealthy kinds of ways. But because the media was there, the next day it was in the newspapers, the next week I had people coming from all over the world, Japan, China, London, everywhere, trying to figure out how they could we could help them with that kind of an initiative. I also need to make a disclaimer, by the way. You see those bottles there. I knew that I was in trouble as soon as I saw the media there because the next day on the front page there you saw this picture, and I explained to Pat, I said, I'm really nervous about people understanding what this picture is. Because neither one of those bottles is mine. And he said, in fact, the one on the right actually belonged to our police commissioner, Timoney. And Pat said, well, why are you worried, Gwen? Because they can see on the label it's light beer. But because Pat was the kind of person that, is the kind of person that he is, it took off. I mean, it had a life of its own. Everybody was expecting around the world. It hit the all of the major newspapers, it was on the media all over the world that Philadelphia's mayor was going to put his city on a diet. And so Pat's wish came true. Well, at any rate, I had to go with it. And the group that you see behind me, actually, we're on Good Morning America there, we have behind me in our famous Love Park. There are about 250 chefs. Now, Philadelphia is known for its culinary arts. That's how we got to where we are. And they themselves decided that they were going to lose weight. And among the 250 of them, they lost about a couple of tons on their own. So here we are on national television, and they're doing the Philly Line Dance. Another collaboration was with the Arthritis Foundation. They actually helped to train facilitators for our walking clubs because I knew that Philadelphia, our mayor walked everywhere. He walked to work every morning, and so his security, they would be driving and protecting him while he would be walking to work. So I actually created walking clubs all around the city, and the mayor provided for security for the various groups that would be walking morning and afternoon and noon. We even created, it became popular for us to have walking, working meetings. So all over Philadelphia, you will have walking clubs, and we still do. I also collaborated with the Black Farmers because we tried to kick off an initiative in the most needy areas of the city. In this area, Southwest Philadelphia, we had Black farmers bring their fresh produce in, and we actually went. I figured if we could demonstrate in the neediest of all of the areas of Philadelphia, especially with our young people, starting with our children, we went into a facility where there were young people or children living maybe with a parent or a guardian in shelters. And this is where we taught them how to, we grew food in gardens and taught them how to prepare. Now, they didn't know it, but we were preparing them to appreciate a plant-based diet. When we first started talking about it, they wanted to throw the food at us. But when they became participants in making their whole grain breads, they would actually make their own breads. And then we had some of the leaders from McDonald's to come and judge their veggie burgers to determine which would be the best one. The kids, almost all of them in that shelter, became plant, I hate to say the word vegetarian because it turns people off, but they were, they're plant-based, and many of them today, those children, 7 and 8 years later, still are on a plant-based diet because they took pride in what they learned to create. So here they are, the black farmers bring their produce, and the kids actually would sell it in their communities. Here I am with the health commissioner and although the city managing director, they had to follow me around if they wanted the kind of activity that they wanted for the health department and for the city. So here we are kicking off one of our big initiatives in those areas. These are some of the other partnerships with media we have here. People magazine actually gave us a 3-page spread. This was something that we could never have afforded to pay for. But because our mayor worked outside of the box and was not afraid to be unconventional, it brought media attention to us. So here we are on the rocky steps, if you will, in Philadelphia, sharing our Philadelphia story. This is just a clip in one of the newspapers in Philadelphia to show our connection and collaboration with the faith-based groups. This is where I enjoy working most because they have facilities, there's some level of organization, but I always insist if we're going to work with a large faith-based group, and we started with the mega churches. Philadelphia has several mega churches, this one over 20,000 members, and we expected at our first session together, I call it Health Journey. And for the faith communities, I use the 40-day journey, you know, the story of how the Jews were released from their bondage in Egypt. And so we go from Egypt to the Promised Land. So that's what we did in the faith community. And more than 1,000 people actually showed up night one. Actually, it was 1,700. And it is sustained because we insist that the pastor, who in Philadelphia, and I think this is true in many of our large congregations, he's kind of the boss. And so whatever the pastor does, the congregants are likely to follow. So this was one of our major collaborations with the faith community. This is another. We got, Oprah was the first one. We couldn't get it on this clip. But Oprah sent her producers to town, and she thought it was great. So she was the first one to jump on it. And Diane Sawyer actually, well, I thought you were going to get a clip of it. It didn't come up. But anyway, we were on several times on Good Morning America and on every talk show that exists in the United States. Now, because I didn't have funding, I had to decide what kind of initiative is this going to look like? So I did a lot of research, and I discovered that at least 5 or 6 elements, main elements, had to be contained in an initiative that was going to be significant in changing the lifestyle in a very large, at that time, the fifth largest city in the nation. I call it the FACES model. I came up with 5 major elements. The first, it had to be fun, because especially after 9/11, the nation was in such a morose mood that, but I discovered that even very sophisticated business people and those in city council appreciated having things that were enjoyable and fun. The second thing is there had to be accountability, because we as humans are not as honest as we'd like to think that we are. I mean, every person you run into, especially ladies, say, I don't know how I gained all of this weight. I eat like a bird. Well, that bird could be an ostrich or a big bird. So accountability is built in. I developed what's called Health Journey, fictitious journeys, fictitious sites. And we would travel quarterly, every 13 weeks, we would travel to a new destination. And everybody had to have a travel buddy, and they got their passports. And anyway, I'll elaborate on that a little bit more later. But accountability had to be built in, so you had to get at least one travel buddy and somebody to whom you could be accountable. The C had to be credible science-based information, because there's so much, at least in the United States, there's a lot of hype out there. And everybody hangs a shingle, and they're an expert in this and that. But it makes a lot of money, you know, losing weight, the pills here, the whatever. They're a dime a dozen. So the information needed to be credible, and that's why I'm so grateful for the Adventist Church and the credibility that we have what the Adventist Health Study and Dr. Gary Fraser and others and Dr. Reese and all of the Dr. David Williams, all of the others who make us look so good. We have credible scientific-based information, so I had to make sure that everything that we shared was credible. The C, there needs to be a way to empower people. And this is very labor-intensive. Every program that we did, every session that I do, every session, people eat. And that's because I knew that if we could get them to appreciate the taste of our plant-based foods without telling them it was plant-based. Now, you can just imagine going into, especially an African-American community, if you don't know anything about it, soul food is the name of the game. And if you mess with our food, you know, you're up for a fight. So we had to make sure that we empowered people to prepare, not only to prepare, to shop for it, and to appreciate the taste. I also knew, as many of you do, that in 21 to 40 days, you can the tongue is the most educable organ of the body. And you can re-educate it anywhere from 21 to 40 days. So this is why every time we have a session, I feed people. And that's labor intensive. And teaching them how to do it so that they can do it without us. So giving them skills, empowering people is a part of that process. And the S, support, yes, but sustainability. How do you keep this going till Jesus comes? And so the good news is that all of what we shared in Philadelphia, even though the mayor and I have been out of office for a year, there's a new administration now, the program still continue. And that word retired, Health Czar, I may be retired from the position, but I am in no way retired. In fact, retirement is against my religion. So that's my FACES model. So built on that, our initiative developed, I had to come with 10 simple principles that were concise, creative, consistent, and doable. And as Adventists, you'll recognize these principles. So the first one, you had to get a buddy for reasons that I explained. Number two, drinking more water. People had to understand that they had to work up to getting a half ounce of water for each pound that they weighed. And by the way, in Philadelphia, if you come, you'll see people walking around with their water bottles and toasting one another. It's a way of life now. Our mayor made sure of that. Increasing physical activity. Philadelphia, we have created more walkways and bicycle paths and racks for our constituents to put their bikes even on the trains and the public transportation. So it's in vogue now to walk in Philadelphia. Enjoying more fruits and vegetables. Choosing foods high in fiber and vegetable protein for all the reasons that we've heard yesterday and today with Dr. Reese. Breathing more deeply. Scheduling time for rest and play. I know most of us are still working on that one, and I certainly am. Scheduling and planning their meals, getting adequate sunlight, and developing meaningful relationships. Well, maybe not in as enthusiastic a way as she is there, but Philadelphia is known as the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. So every program that we did had to share those 10 principles. Our health journey was built on, as I said, fictitious trips to fictitious locations like Honolulu, Hawaii was one of our more popular ones. And at the end of every journey, you see, people would get their passports and they could go free of charge to any major health club or gym and come to any of the seminars free of charge. It was unheard of. Even Bill Clinton himself told me that this was probably the best model for the nation. He and Sanjay Gupta, they came to visit Philadelphia several times. And so we would celebrate every journey. We would end it here, having traveled to Honolulu, Hawaii. We had a luau. And yes. And so these are some of the programs that we had at the work site. This is right in City Hall where we would have people. This is our cooking class. Even the children involved, we would do lunch and learn sessions. Every day there was a schedule, morning, noon, and evening, all 24/7, there was a schedule where people, this was right outside my office at City Hall, line aerobics for those of you who are conservative. And these are some of the other programs that were developed in our city. So here are some of the activities. These, now, I knew that in order to get people excited about something, you had to go to the leadership. And these are some of our elected officials. The gentleman in the middle was one of our most popular radio personalities. And he was interviewing me one day about diabetes. I didn't realize at the time that he was a brittle diabetic and had several comas, diabetic comas. And during one of the breaks, he said, "Can you help me?" Long story short, I told him, "If you break, let's meet with your wife." We met with her. They bought a dog, got him exercising. He had to walk the dog every day. I prepared his meals for 2 weeks while I was teaching his wife how to prepare the meals, plant-based. In two weeks, his insulin, he was on the highest doses of not only the oral but insulin. 2 weeks later, his physician, his endocrinologist, had to cut his insulin in half. And after about 6 weeks, unbelievable, it even made a believer out of me, he was off of his insulin. And of course, the news got out about that. And so I became known as the Diabetes Lady, and we launched the Diabetes Prevention Initiative actually for the nation. And here, after having done that for about a year, this is Dr. James Gavin, who was the immediate past president of the National Diabetes Education Program and also the immediate past president of Morehouse Medical School. He came to Philly to make sure that what he was hearing was true. We had a big press conference, and here he is. And the gentleman on the left, now this is newsworthy, the gentleman on the left grew up in one of the areas of Philadelphia, you know, they call it where the hoods grew up, the big tough guys, and he was one of the big tough leaders. At any rate, he came to one of the seminars to accompany his fiancée, who's a diabetic. He came to actually complain that this initiative was taking money from his area of the city and was going to complain to the mayor before the second election that we needed to do away with this silly health czar and give the money to his area. Long story short, after having two sessions, being 2 weeks in the Wellspring program that we were piloting for Lifestyle Center of America for diabetes, he came to me and apologized on his knees in front of the audience. And I thought, I didn't know what he was doing, his big, deep voice. He got on his knees and grabbed my hand while I was, you know, giving the lecture. And I said, "Now, the man knows I'm married, I'm sure, and I'm an old granny at that." So, anyway, with his big booming voice, he apologized to the city of Philadelphia for having thought that this was going to be an insignificant initiative. And now he is a speaker all over the United States for the National Diabetes Education Program. He fixes his veggie ribs and helps his friends, who now many of them have had amputations and are complications from diabetes. He was a part of that big press conference that we had, and individuals, 77 brittle diabetics came to the program. 4 weeks later, and I almost hate to say this because I couldn't believe it myself, everyone who was on insulin, their endocrinologists had to follow them. They were off of insulin, and all of them off of the oral agents. We had 77 participants. So it can be done. Diabetes is the, and I became known as the Diabetes Lady because I figured, well, if I dealt with diabetes, that's kind of the umbrella for all of the chronic degenerative diseases. If you're talking about elevated lipids, if you're talking about obesity, especially central obesity, and all of those, high blood pressure, all of those things actually are related to or contribute to diabetes. So very quickly, and these are some of the other, there's Frenchie preparing his ribs. And these are some of those who had to lose 100 pounds, but I took a year for them. But most of them, we celebrated when they lost their first 100 pounds by rock climbing. So I like to do unorthodox things. This lady got off of her, she stopped smoking. The Jefferson Hospital Health System, which is the largest in Philadelphia, we had to beg and beg and beg until they thought that I was credible enough to run a two-week live-in residential program for brittle diabetics. And they said, "If this doesn't work, you and the mayor are out of here." And, of course, it worked better than we could ever imagine. This lady, brittle diabetic, off of her insulin and stopped smoking. This lady as well. And this lady came to the program. Type 1 diabetic, was scheduled to have her leg removed because of gangrene. Left the 2 weeks. Now, I've only seen this twice. And she had to sign herself out of her doctor's service because they said that they just knew this was nonsense and that she was surely going to die of infection. They had to cancel her surgery. And she's a school nurse in Philadelphia, and she still has both of her legs. This lady got off of all her medication. You know, there are just so many stories to tell. But just let me say this. Isn't it interesting that in these last days, which I don't have to apologize to say that, do I, when I have been a thought against, that we're living in the last days. But isn't it interesting that even in the words of Barack Obama, President Obama, it's been 3 weeks now that I heard him say, other than the problems that we have with terrorism, that for the nation, that health care is the most important. And isn't it interesting that God gave such a legacy of health to Seventh-day Adventists? And I would teach my children with object lessons, and I always use object lessons. You might not be able to see this. But this is a thermostat, and this is a thermometer. I'd like to think now of the Adventist Church not being a thermometer and just relating to the temperature of the world. But I like what Dr. Handesides and his team, what they've done, what we're doing at Loma Linda, and all of those who work in the area of health ministries. I'd like for us to consider to be a thermometer, because a thermometer sets the tone. So I'd like to end with this statement. What the world needs more than anything is hope. People are tired of hearing sermons and lectures, and so now that I'm no longer health czar, I spend my time now doing these 40-day journeys from Egypt to the Promised Land, and I think one of our participants is out here somewhere, but I've had four of them in recent months, and they have we just can't accommodate all the people who want to join them. People now are looking to see what people who look like them, what can happen to them. So we have to give people hope. And not by lecturing, but creating an army of those who can lead. And I'd like to see the Seventh-day Adventist Church lead, to be the thermometer and to give hope. Closing with my... Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you. You got the message. A thermostat. But I'm an old granny now. And I'd like to end in Philadelphia, rapping is very popular. I'm no rapper, so don't worry for those of you who are conservative. But this is the best I can do. I like to say good, better, best. I'll never let it rest till my good gets better and my better gets best. Say that with me. Good, better, best. I'll never let it rest till my good gets better. Now, let's say it all over Geneva. Let's shout it like you mean it. Good, better, best. I'll never let it rest till my good gets better and my better gets best. Stay with me.